am Joe Saltway, a proud member of the Rotary Club of Bowmanville, which is just east of the great city of Toronto, Canada. In months to come, I'll be filling in for the incomparable Peter Tong as your host of Talking Rotary while Peter prepares for and serves as governor for District 5550. I'm looking forward to bringing you some great stories from Rotarians around the world, learning who they are and about the great work they're doing to make that world a better place. And I'm here with Ken Masson, the founder and president of the Rotary Club of World Disability Advocacy, and Jagwe Muzafaru, who is a member of that club and the founder and chair of Blind Football Uganda. He is in Kampala. Ken is in Colombia. This is a truly international interview, and welcome to you both.
Thank you. Thank you, Joe.
Thank you.
Jagwe, I want to start with you. Let's talk about the game itself. For those who aren't familiar with it, describe what I, as a sighted person, would see and hear in a game of blind football, or as we know it here in North America, blind soccer. Describe what I would see and hear.
It's a sport which is played by people who are visually impaired or who are totally blind, who play on a surface of 40 by 20, 40 meters long, 20 meters wide. And the game itself, it's played on a surface which is artificially modified, or grass or wood. So that's how the game is structured. But it's played in a team format, 5 people on each side. One side has 5 people and another side has 5 people. But the beauty about our game is the goalkeeper is always a sighted person. The goalkeeper who is in the goal is always a sighted person. And that's how the game is played. So how do they score? Behind the goal lines, there's always someone we call a guide. So he's the one who is off the pitch, who directs the players when to kick, when to score. And we don't play for 90 minutes like for sighted football. For us, we play for 30 minutes. Each half is for 15-15. And we play for all rules that are involved in football. Just some of them are just removed, like offsides, handballs. So that's how you can easily understand the game. But the beauty as well, the beauty about the game is the ball. Our ball is a bit special. It has a sound system in it, so it makes a rotating sound whenever it moves, just the way you can hear goal ball balls. So even in blind soccer, we have balls that are modified for the game. They make sound when they move. So that's how people can easily identify the game.
And the players are all blindfolded. Why is that?
The players are blindfolded. It's internationally recognized, but specifically to bring out the level, the fairness in the game. One, some people have a certain percentage of light perception. Others can identify shadows. So to bring out that aspect of fair play, that we are all on a leveled ground, we have to cover your eyes. And one other thing that I may not have said is, how do these guys understand that they can't collide? Oh, how we keep our game safe. So if someone is coming, approaching me, if I'm the one in possession of the ball, so I have to keep quiet. I keep playing, dribbling. And then the person coming to me has to keep saying, voy, voy, voy. It's V-O-Y. Voy, 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 so that you don't collide. So if I hear that your voice is coming on the right side, I will turn to the left side and I move in another direction.
Yeah, I've heard that voy a lot. The games that I've seen, I've heard it, and I often wondered what that was, and I had to look it up. I Googled blind football, and I Googled Paralympics, and some of the highlights of this game are incredible, especially like the Brazilians and things. These guys are picking corners with fantastic shots. How do they do that when they're blind?
We always go through some time of, oh, we take some time to train them. And specifically, we take them through normal drills like in other football categories. We train them in other aspects, but the most important thing is on the communication bit. because it's the biggest thing that drives our game. So everyone who is on the pitch has to understand, has to communicate to everyone, and I also has to communicate to other people in the game, and that's how they easily can manage to play the game easily.
Otherwise, they can't, you know, if you're open for a pass, or if you want to, you have to know where your teammates are, right?
You just have to communicate. If you're on the pitch and I have the ball, so if I get the ball, I have to communicate to my team that I have the ball.
Okay.
Then they know that I have the ball. They know my how we may use codes, or we may use normal language that I have the ball. And then a person who's on your team cannot attack you in that way. And another thing is, when it comes to communication as well, the guide also helps them that you are on the same team. They have demarcation. The pitch has demarcation. So when it reaches a specific section that you guys are playing, there's some the guide has to help you and tells you, please, you are on the same team. Don't attack each other. So you give each other space. But always there's that communication bit. So if I want to pass a ball to someone, I call, and then you understand where he is, then you pass it to him. Yeah.
Now, if you're blind or partially blind or you're somehow vision impaired, I've heard that your other senses, your hearing and your touch and all these things are heightened. Does that play into this at all? Because maybe you hear better than I do.
I've had that argument a bit for some good time, but I've got testimonies from the players. One of the experiment I did, we have balls that we use to play, so they have different sound levels. There are some which are louder, there are some which are low, have low volume. So you can drop two balls at a go. You can drop two balls in the field at a go, and for them they can keep that identity that this is the ball that we are supposed to follow. They don't follow the other ball. So that justifies that at a given level, their senses are given hyped. Some of the senses, if they are blind, some of their senses are hyped. Yeah.
Ken, I want to turn to you. Tell me about your club. The Jagua is a member of it. Tell me about the Rotary Club of World Disability Advocacy.
Sure, I'd love to do that. First of all, I want to say though, Jagway is an outstanding Rotarian. And the Rotary motto is service above self, and Jagway really represents that. He is so dedicated to what he's doing, and so passionate about what he's doing. He has built this thing from nothing to a league of what it is today, and he has visions of expanding it into having women teams and international teams, and he lives this. If you look follow Jagway on LinkedIn, he's constantly doing something passionate about this. So he's an outstanding Rotarian, exactly what a Rotarian should be. With he's just once again, service above self. That's what he is. So the club actually, which is a very cool club because it's a cause-based club, which means everybody in this club is dedicated to the cause. And our cause is human rights for people with disabilities on a global level. So every single member that we have, some way or another has a passion about that cause, which makes it a unique club because oftentimes you'll have a Rotary club to have people with varying interests. But we all are working towards this. We have many people like Jagway in our club doing things like for people with disabilities. So we've been around for a couple of years now. We're a virtual club. Interesting thing about our club is that we're out of District 7910, which is in Massachusetts, but out of our 45 members, only one person is living in Massachusetts. I was, but I'm not now. So that makes it another unique aspect of it. And to work on a global level is fascinating because of the different cultures that you're working with. We are working on things that are global, and advocacy is very much a part of our it's a part of our name and part of our cause. Some things we're working on right at the moment, we are getting a group together to have a summit to talk about inclusive education on a global level. Never been done before. Local levels have talked about it, but global levels have not. So we want to work on education for people with disabilities, and make sure that they're getting proper education. So we're going to have a summit to discuss that and then come up with a project out of that. We're also working on a project for books for Malawi. We're sending Braille books to Malawi because in the villages of Malawi and many countries, they don't have the opportunity. The blind students there have an opportunity to read. So we're gathering books and sending them over there. We're working on cerebral palsy. We set up a fellowship for cerebral palsy to increase awareness of cerebral palsy.
And people in your club are both disabled and able-bodied. Is that that's right?
Yeah, yeah. The bottom line is they all have a passion for the subject.
Possibilities are all around us. We see potential in unexpected places. And when we share our knowledge, vision, and connections, we turn great ideas into action. Together, we can make real change happen. We're Rotary. We are people of action. Get involved today at rotary.org/action.
I just want to bring this back to sports for a little bit.
Sure.
How important are participation in sports for people with disabilities, not just blind soccer, but you know, people who may be disabled in some other way? Perhaps both of you could answer that. Jagwe, how important is this for a sport like this for blind people?
Sport in general, it's very important for people with disabilities for reasons mostly relating to, like for me, my setting here in Uganda. I look at most of the communities, we have a setting or a stereotype that if you are disabled, they have to take you either to the village or you have to be housed indoor. So they always have a routine. Some of them who go to school, they end up having a routine of going to school, coming home. So they don't have that physical touch or physical connection with the entire world. So in the first instance, the sport also gives you the social connectivity that they may not have. Because when you organize events, even if they are for blind football or another game, not only people with disability come and watch them, other people come and watch them. So it really brings in the social aspect, the social connectivity. Another thing is changing their mental health. Most of the people are really disturbed. They are depressed because some of them are frustrated. I can't work anywhere. Nobody is accepting me. But when they come to the field or they come to the playground, most of them are accepted in the communities. Then beyond that, we always have the opportunity aspect. There's no way an organization has to look for other people outside your circle. So if you have a sports or a club and you're organized, so an organization that may want to support people, I'm drafting the cases from my sport as well. Other people who may want to support your people or a certain category of persons with disability, they come to you. For example, in blind football, people coming to our events and see that they want to have internship placement, they want to give job opportunities. They just reach out to you because already you have an organized structure, people know you, and you have the number of people they want. So they just come to you and then they engage you and then you give in the contacts of those people and they reach them and then that's how they employ them. So those are the few things that I can cite out.
Kim, what do you think?
Yeah, well, what Jagway has to say is correct. And I think that's what's the importance of sports, particularly with people with disabilities. And I know in countries like Uganda, people with disabilities are unfortunately constantly looked down on. And so football, what Jagway is doing, gives the people an opportunity to build their confidence and to do something that maybe they didn't believe or people were telling them that they couldn't do. So what he's doing there is unbelievable. And he's building a lot of things. So football, it helps you build attitudes, leadership attitudes, a belief in yourself. So it's a beautiful thing, sports, as far as people with disabilities are concerned.
And you once said, not once, you were actually, I think this was a couple of years ago or last year, you were on this podcast
Peter.
with
Peter,
Peter, yeah. And you said, and I listened to that and I picked this out. You said people with disabilities make great Rotarians. Do you remember saying that?
It was 2 years ago,
2 years ago,
but
yeah. Yeah, do you remember what that line really stuck out for me? What do you think? And Jagway, you can comment on that too.
well, people with disabilities oftentimes have, for lack of a better word, they struggled in their life for various reasons because of their disability and because of society. People with disabilities actually, because of the struggles that they have to go through, that makes them stronger people and more dedicated people, and they're more passionate people because of what they've grown up in their life. So overall, people with disabilities make good Rotarians because they're going to be dedicated, and they make good employees too because they'll be dedicated to the job. So overall, yes, that's true. People with disabilities, in many cases, have a lot more passion and commitment than oftentimes the people that haven't gone through what they've gone through.
Jagway, what does being a Rotarian mean to you then?
Yeah, it's true. I can just add on to what Ken has said. Being a Rotarian gives you an opportunity, maybe to express yourself, because there are some people who don't have that confidence, and also connecting to the entire world. I wouldn't have met Ken or other people in the Rotary circles without being a Rotarian. So I believe, yeah, it's a great thing.
You're not. I just want to bring it back to you again, Jagway. You're not totally blind, right? You have some sight, and you lost this eyesight in an accident. What happened to you?
It was a simple accident that happened in childhood, like a fire at school. There are bands of fire at school. So that's how I came to be visually impaired.
And what did that mean for your life? Have you, did it make you, I don't know, has it made you want to work harder? Has it made you, did you go through a bad time? What was it like for you? What's it been like for you with that vision?
Yeah, when it comes to reading, mostly getting back to the community, because it happened when I was a bit young. So getting back to the community, it wasn't that easy. So
And
because even in a school, no, nobody like would like to associate with you like I was before. So getting back to the community was a little bit hard. In some instances, there are some roads that are there are some routes after school that I couldn't pass because of teasing, such things. Because normally I used to wear glasses because I wasn't proud of what I am. And I tried to, at home, we have, they tried to do on my body a few surgeries to see that I get back, but I realized there's nothing to change. Then afterwards, I became proud of what I am. And proudly, I lived the life as I am. But it was a bit hard, mostly in associating with the community. The way they saw you up to now, there are some people who say who just think, even people who are blind, who don't want to associate with the blind. Reason, they think that it's contagious when it's not even contagious. Like me, it was just a fire accident I got at school, and there is no way that it can be contagious to people. But when I was growing up, there are some people who never wanted to associate with me because they think I have a disease that may be contagious. So it's always about the community, dealing with the community. And it comes from little awareness, because most of the people who become visually impaired or blind, we are chased from towns, we are chased from the big cities, and then people find it hard to meet visually impaired in communities. So if
And
they can't see them, they can't understand how what they go through, what they are. But if they are left within the community, not taken to villages or rural areas, there we can easily associate easily. But for me, my parents used to push me, you can do this, you can do this. With the exception of football, at first they were also scared not to allow me to play around because they fear people will anyway tease you. And whenever you could get abused or teased, and people you go and report to them, they get tired of also being nagged about it. So, but in the end, what they did, they just left me live the way I want. Because when I reached 18, I was supposed to do more like two or three surgeries on the eyesight. But I just told them, look at this, there's nothing we are changing. I accepted what I am. And from there, I've never even used glasses anymore. And you couldn't say anything or anything that is wrong with me. But I just decided to face the reality. This is me. Why should I put it on in bed when I'm not in bed? And then when I move out in public, I don't put it on.
Join the worldwide ShelterBox community to receive exclusive email updates about where ShelterBox is currently working in the world. You'll be joining a community of passionate individuals who are impatient to see a world where no one is left without shelter after disaster. Head over to www.shelterboxcanada.org/signup.
Ken, how common is a story like Jagway's where they're ostracized and it's such a challenge for them? You have members all over the world. Is this the kind of story you hear a lot?
Yeah, you do. And one of the beauties of the fact that I got involved in this club, because I come from the United States, is to better understand how disabilities are viewed around the world. How they're viewed in the United States and how they're viewed in a country like Uganda is totally different. Even though there are obviously discrimination in every country, particularly in countries like Uganda and Kenya and Nigeria and other countries in that area. When you have a disability, you're looked as if you have a curse. And so society really kind of puts you in a corner. And oftentimes, as Jagway is talking about, he's got had an accident because his sight issues, and but people think they can catch it. They can catch it that it's something that's an illness, and that's very common with all the disabilities. In addition to that, oftentimes a mother who gives birth to a child who has a disability is looked down on. So it's an eye-opener, and I think I encourage anyone to better understand on a global level disabilities, because once again, in North America and in Africa, it's totally different. And the struggles of Jagway are much more challenging than somebody who's in North America.
Jaguar, is Uganda going to have a football team, blind football team in the Paralympics?
Not yet. We are not yet there because I have to tell you, we haven't got like government funding as yet. Everything that I do is support from friends and mostly family members and then other people around. So the thing is, we applied last year in October, no, in August, and the International Blind Sports Federation recognized Uganda. Our football, it's now recognized. So we are on the Paralympic calendar as members of IBSA. So it gives us liberty to participate in any international competitions. But the biggest issue now at the moment, we got the recognition of membership when we were when the qualification window had closed, because it closed when other teams had already all events had been played. So in 2024, we shall not have any team, but my promise is to have a team in 2028, Los Angeles.
That's
That's my
fantastic.
promise. Yeah.
That's a fantastic goal. I hope to see you there. And I hope do you play, by the way, or are you just the administrator?
We have partially sighted football, but
Okay.
I don't participate in any of them.
Okay.
Because I have to be in a role, I have
Yes.
to stay in my line. Yeah.
That's right. Okay. Well, thank you very much for talking to me, both of you. This is a fantastic story. It's great to hear positive things happening in Rotary and for people all over the world. So thank you very much and best of luck to you both. Wonderful speaking with you. Thank you.
Thank you, Joe.
Thank you.
Take care.
Welcome.
Bye now.
Thank you so much for joining us on another great episode of Talking Rotary. We would love to hear from you. Please send us your comments and story ideas, and you can share with us easily by sending us an email at feedback@talkingrotary.org. Let's keep talking Rotary.